This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, good Wednesday morning to you. It's Wake Up Call, SportsMap Radio. Hey, coming up on the show today, we're going to talk to Derek Fisher, five-time NBA champion, on a number of things, including the Lakers winning the title, his relationship with Kobe, LeBron, the importance of the Laker championship, a couple of things like that. We'll talk to Derek Fisher coming up in this hour. Masters getting underway tomorrow. So a lot of conversation of where the tournament is in terms of who's the favorites. We get this every April. Now you get into November, thanks COVID. And everybody focusing on Bryson DeChambeau because he's been overpowering Augusta during practice rounds. Does that translate into play on Thursday? We'll discuss that. News out of college football yesterday. You heard me. If you heard yesterday's show, I ranted about, I think people need to slow down, calm down, stop being holier than thou when college football has to cancel games. They knew they were going to have to cancel games. Some conferences had built in buffers. Others did not. But for the most part, a lot of this was anticipated. But that being said, the SEC got slaughtered this weekend. They've lost three games. They've lost Tennessee, Texas A&M. They've lost Alabama, LSU, and Auburn against Mississippi State. There's a few other games that are in jeopardy. Sam Pittman, who's the head coach at Arkansas, he's been tested positive for COVID. Their game against Florida could be in jeopardy. I think Georgia and Missouri is safe as of right now. There doesn't seem to be any report on that. But keep an eye out for some of those other ones in conference. But the good news for the SEC is they have a week before the SEC title game in which they can make up a majority of these games. Unfortunately, not all the games are going to get made up. There's going to be some schools that have been hit twice. I think Missouri's been hit already. Vanderbilt has been hit already. Florida's been hit already. So if you lose a game, you just can't make it up. So you just don't play 10. You play 8, maybe 9, whatever. But the SEC has got really hammered this weekend in terms of losing a couple of games. Also, I mean, look, you look across the landscape. Navy, the midshipmen, they've now lost their second game. They have another game that's been postponed on their schedule. So it's happening across the landscape. But coming up next, so the Masters is this week. It starts Thursday, and everybody thinks Bryson DeChambeau is going to bomb his way to a green jacket. What about the course, and can the course hold on to the other things it does well to sort of prevent this onslaught? We'll talk about that next. It is Wake Up Call on a Wednesday on the SportsMap Radio Network.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, these may be uncertain times, but what is certain is that every family needs a reliable thermometer. Protect your family with the Exergen Temporal Scanner, the only home thermometer used and recommended by hospitals, physicians, and clinics. Stay safe with Exergen. And a happy Veterans Day for all of you out there who have served our country. Veterans Day, the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month in 1918, formerly known as Armistice Day, honoring all our military veterans. Memorial Day honors the veterans who died in battle, but Veterans Day honors everybody who served, alive or dead. So this happy Veterans Day to everybody. They always say freedom isn't free. It should be, because you should be born. You're born with inalienable rights. You should be born free, but it's not. It needs to be protected. And we thank all the veterans who have done that for all of the years of this great nation. As we continue along this morning, the Masters getting underway tomorrow. And I'm concerned about this year's Masters, Ron. I really am. I love this tournament. It's my favorite, my favorite events of the year. It's my favorite course. It's my favorite golf tournament. I love Augusta National. I've loved Augusta National since I was a kid. And the reason is even when I wasn't following golf, and even when I wasn't really paying attention to the sport, my father and his company had been going down to Augusta National to attend the tournament every year since 1981, 82. And so every April, my father and his business buddies would go to Augusta, and they would attend a Masters. They would rent a house, and they would attend the tournament. And my dad would come home, and he'd have like a T-shirt or something for me and my brother. And even though we didn't really know golf or pay attention to golf, we were more NBA and NFL kind of kids, I always knew that my dad went to the Masters, and he would come home with some books and whatnot, and programs. And as I got into golf and I got into the tournament, Jack Nicklaus in 86 was really the first time I really started to understand how special Augusta was. I got to go in 1990. It's the only time I've ever been to the Masters. And it's one of those experiences I'll never forget. I love that course so much. But it's going to get slaughtered this week if Bryson DeChambeau can keep the ball in the fairway. It's going to get annihilated. What he's doing is unbelievable to this golf course. What he is saying he's hitting and what people are saying during the practice rounds that have nobody around, but there are a few people that are, you know, kind of saying, oh my God, he put the ball over there on the first hole, or oh my God, he drove the green at three, or oh my God, he put it within pitching wedge distance on this par five. He's going to kill this golf course. He really is. This course, it's all about chipping and putting. It's all about the greens. It's all about reading the speed. But here's the other factor that you have to put in consideration when you play a course like Augusta. Because you can spin the ball with the lower irons, because a pitching wedge is much easier to hit than a five iron into a green, he's going to be able to place the ball in various locations that are going to be important on the greens to get birdies. So if you're playing and you're trying to hit a five iron into a long par four and you're trying to get it to hold and you're trying to get it to stop so it doesn't go to the left side of the green where three putt is probably your best option, he's going to hit pitching wedge. He's going to hit sand wedge. And that's going to enable him to shoot the ball super high, land it soft, land it wherever he wants to aim it. And that means he's going to have more shots at birdie. And if he's putting well, he's going to shoot in the low 60s. And he could shoot in the low 60s all four rounds. This is not a golf course, and this is not a golf tournament that lends itself to what like the U.S. Open does, where they say, look, we'll punish you with rough if you miss the green. We'll bury your golf ball in the rough if you miss the green. And, oh, by the way, when you're on the green, they're going to be fast. Augusta greens are lightning quick. Nobody ever gets a measurement on them because the course won't allow it, but they're lightning quick. Seve Ballesteros once famously said, I practice by trying to hit a ball in a bathtub and try to get it to stop before the drain. Right? That's how fast those greens are. But there's a fall weather aspect to this that might slow it down a little bit. There's rain that might slow this down a little bit. If he's bombing on this golf course and he can get those balls to stop on the green, he's going to shoot 62. He'll shoot 61, 62 every single day. Now, when Tiger Woods won the Masters in 1997, he did the exact same thing. He was averaging 320 off the tee. The course was way shorter then. But the course had always prided itself on being a golf course that was tricky. Right. Yeah. Okay. If you can drive it 300 yards, that's fine, but you're going to have a side hill lie to the green. Or when you get on the green, you're going to three putt because it's lightning fast. And Tiger annihilated it because he was hitting pitching wedge and sand wedge and nine iron into greens wherever the guys, other guys were hitting five irons into. I remember when I was Jack Nicklaus won in 86. And I remember Greg Norman, who was a long hitter in his day, was tinkering with an iron shot into the 18th green to try to get into the playoff with Jack. And I think he was hitting six iron into the green. These guys are hitting sand wedge into that green, and it's been lengthened. And that's where the long hitters have been able to have success at Augusta. Now, do long hitters win green jackets? Yes, they do. Arnold Palmer hit it further than anybody else. He's won a number of green jackets. Jack Nicklaus hit it way further than anybody else in his time. He's got all sorts of green jackets. Tiger Woods, the same thing. Bubba Watson, the same thing. Now, look, John Daly's never won one because John Daly couldn't control a lot of his shots. But Bryson can. And I'm worried about this tournament because I don't want it to be a joke. I don't want this cherished golf course to be a pitch and putt place. And that's what Bryson's about ready to do to it. And here's a tricky thing. Augusta National was able to lengthen its golf course when Tiger Woods won. The layout that they had in 1997, they knew it wasn't going to work, but they had options. They had land, they could expand, they could move the tee boxes, they created different tee areas, and so they changed the golf course. They lengthened it by close to 500 yards, I think over 500 yards over the last two decades to accommodate the length of the game. They can't do that anymore. They don't have any more place to go. If Bryson's going to do this every year and the young guys that follow get his regimen down and they become bulky and they're hitting it 320 on the fly and rolling it to 360 or whatever it is that he's doing right now, this course is going to become obsolete. Now, I know that's an apocalyptic view. And I mean, it's greens and it's chipping and short game does still hold on to scoring so it doesn't get out of hand. But Augusta never was a tournament like the U.S. Open that was trying to play to a certain score. They just didn't like being embarrassed. If the conditions were right and 16 under, 14 under, 15 under was where the scoring was, they were okay with that. If the conditions were right, we had sunny skies, maybe the greens were a little softer, whatever it may be. If the winning score was one over, that was fine too. Again, conditions vary every single year for the tournament. Sometimes they don't get any rain. Sometimes the course isn't soft. And sometimes the greens are just too quick. The U.S. Open has always wanted to play to par. They always want to look, get this course to somewhere around par. And if a guy breaks it, a guy breaks it, but let's keep everything around par. Tiger Woods won the U.S. Open in 2000 at Pebble Beach, finished 12 under. Nobody broke par for the whole tournament. Nobody else broke par. Everybody else was like plus two, plus three. So you can have one guy be the outlier for it, but you'd rather not have everybody at minus 20 or whatever it might be. And so that's where I'm worried. I love the way this golf course is challenging, and I love the way it can be so rewarding and yet take so much away from you. I love the fact that a guy can go on a scoring spree like Nicholas in 86, where he can shoot 30 on the back side with an eagle at 15 and a birdie at 16 and a yes sir birdie at 17, or Phil Mickelson doing the exact same thing when he won in 2004, or Tiger Woods, or anybody else that had ability to put some red numbers on the board. But that golf course can suck it back from you. A puff of wind and it's in Rays Creek. A puff of wind and you're off to the left and you got to chip and putt and get up and down from a spot you're not going to be able to do it because the pin is too tight. That's been the beauty of Augusta National. It will give, it'll give you excitement, it'll give you scoring, but it will also strip you and leave you bare. That's going to get taken away if Bryson and anybody that follows what he's been able to do could do to the future of this golf tournament.
But yeah, but won't weather play into effect here? I mean, they're expecting 90% chance of rain tomorrow.
Yeah, that's actually going to play into his hand even more.
You think so?
Yeah, because when it rains, all the hitters, the ball doesn't travel as far on the ground.
I get that.
So Bryson is going to carry it. Carry distance won't be affected unless it's windy.
Yeah, that's
so the carry distance goes to 320, right? He's able to roll it out 340, 350. But nobody else will be able to carry it except maybe Rory and Brooks and Dustin Johnson. A lot of the golfers aren't going to carry it 320 in the rain. So their ball is going to stop. So they're going to have 175 to the pin. He's going to still have 135 to the pin.
So I guess we got to pray for rain.
Yeah. So, well, or no. Wind. You want wind. You want wind. But it also makes the green softer. So if he's pinning pitching wedge, that when it's sunny and hot and it hits the green and bounces off like it hit a roof, that's what you're looking for if you're trying to get scoring to be more in a level playing field. If you're hitting it high and putting spin on the ball and it's stopping anyway because the greens are soft, then he has a tremendous advantage. Because if he's hitting pitching wedge in the rain, and that ball's just, it's going to, wherever he wants to drop it. So if he knows he hits his pitching wedge 116, he's got 117 in the flag, he's hitting it within a yard. Because the ball won't move. So it hits the green. So now what you want is you want wind, and you want the ability of the course to harden up. Here's the other part of Augusta that's troubling. Augusta, for years and years and years, never had any rough. Never had any rough. So if you sprayed it to the left or sprayed it to the right, if the ball was technically in play, it wasn't in the woods or anything like that, you just hit it over the next fairway, or off to the left or right, you weren't in rough. But now there's rough. But it's not a lot of rough. They never wanted to do what the U.S. Open did or the British Open did. They just wanted a first cut. Well, that's nothing to a guy with a pitching wedge in his hand, as we saw at the U.S. Open. Now, The other aspect of this is when you lengthen a golf course like they did to Tiger. So when Tiger won in 97, they said, look, we can't do this anymore. This kid's going to obliterate this thing. He's shot 21 under. He's killing it. So we have to lengthen the golf course. One of the problems that comes with that, now that's fine because you want to put a little bit more challenge into the long hitters. It takes the short hitters out of play, right? So the short hitters can't be competitive. You know, once guys are starting to hit hybrids into greens, because they can't hit it 300 yards, and everybody else is hitting 7-iron, they're out. So you can eliminate a good portion of the field right away if the course doesn't lend itself to some roll into some length. Because guys just won't be able to compete with 4-irons in their hands, 5-irons in their hands, and Bryson, Rory, Dustin, Brooks Koepka, the long hitters on the tour hitting pitching wedge or 9-iron. So listen, I'm trying not to get all apocalyptic here. I don't want to say the Masters becomes a pitch and putt kind of course, but I'm worried about its future. If the trend is going to be 320 carry and 340, 350 roll, that's troubling. And the one factor is, though, the fans who don't care about this stuff like I do, they'll love it if Bryson is bombing away. They're going to love it because people like long hitters. That's one of the reasons John Daly's popular. John Daly wasn't popular because he won the PGA Championship as an alternate filling in for Nick Price. John Daly was popular because he was from Arkansas. He looked like everybody else, kind of rolled in an RV. And oh, by the way, he hit it further than anybody had ever seen back in 1991. And Bryson's the same way. The crowd isn't going to be there. No fan, but people on TV are going to be like, my God, where is that going? Did he drive the green at 3? I mean, 3 is a par 4. He's flown the green with a 3-wood. I'm a little worried about it. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. We're going to continue on Wednesday. We'll talk more about the SEC's canceling some games this weekend. Again, what does that mean? And we'll also get into some NFL because the Steelers are got a little bit of COVID problems as well as we continue on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, you wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking, don't compromise your visibility with streaks or smearing on your windows. When it's time to replace your wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and see their selection. Professional parts people will help you find just the right wiper blades for your vehicles. O'Reilly Auto Parts will install those wiper blades free of charge. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. I know you're going to make fun of me on this, but as I was saying earlier, I went and changed my wiper blades recently and I needed help. I didn't know how to do it. I couldn't figure it out on my car. And then when I did, I felt stupid because it looked obvious. I went, oh, is that how you do it? Man, that looks, now I see it. But I couldn't see it when I was installing the wiper blades. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. Similar to NASCAR putting restrictions on cars, does PGA put restrictions on equipment? Here's where I've heard this. Maybe not clubs, but the ball. Jack Nicklaus has always talked about this. Pull back the technology on the ball. I don't know how to do that. I don't know what they do to that. But that's what he said. You could, you know, the drivers. Okay. When I go visit my parents, my parents still, they keep everything. It's like a museum to Tony D, where like all the stuff I've had as a kid, they just have it like stocked away. So I used to go venture into some old stuff that I used to have. My first golf clubs are down in the basement. So we're down in the basement somewhere. And I looked at the driver I used to play with in 88. It's about the driver's about the size of like a small fist. And today it's just like the size of a head. Like it's gigantic. The difference is amazing. So technology on the clubs are hard to do because here's the thing. With the clubs, you want the players to play. You want people to buy what the players are playing, right? I know that they have different clubs and all that. But if a guy's playing Mizuno, you want to be able to go to the store to buy the Mizuno clubs. The ball is a little different. You can still go buy a Titleist Pro V1, and a pro can play a pulled down version of a Titleist Pro V1, or so they tell me. I'm not really quite sure. Real quick, yesterday we did the Tony La Russa story, how he got pulled over for a DUI. When was that? Back in February? But they knew about it. The White Sox knew about it before they signed him to the contract. And yesterday I made the joke that did he pull the do you know who I am card? Apparently, Ron, he did pull the do you know who I am card when he got pulled over. He said he was a Hall of Famer. He said, oh, I'm a Hall of Famer. He goes, I'm a Hall of Fame baseball person. I'm legit. I'm a Hall of Famer, brother. You're trying to embarrass me. I wasn't surprised. Listen, I can criticize this all I want, and we can sort of chuckle at this all we want. But if I was that famous, I might pull it too. I don't know. I don't know if I would, but I think I would at various points. The do you know who I am card. But apparently Tony La Russa did exactly that when he got pulled over. And the White Sox still hired him. So I don't think it's a good hire. I've been saying this before. I don't think they're going to let him go. I think they're still going to roll with this. But it's a terrible, terrible look for the White Sox. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's as we continue on Wake Up Call. So as I said at the top of the hour, the SEC down three games this weekend, including Alabama-LSU. I got to be honest with you. If Alabama-LSU was a 1-2 or a 1-3 clash, I think this would be a bigger story. LSU is struggling this year. They're not in the top 25. They are not a threat to Alabama in their number one ranking. They are just a team that has been befuddled with a number of problems this year. One, losing almost everybody that helped you win a national championship a year ago, and just not having the guys to fill those roles. And Alabama continues to roll along. They're 6-0. They're the number one team in the country. This was supposed to be a fun weekend. If you think about Saturday, it was supposed to be a little Masters, and then you roll into a great Alabama-LSU matchup in Baton Rouge, and it's not going to play out that way. Tennessee also had its game canceled against Texas A&M. There's a problem within the Aggies program, and then you have Mississippi State that's got some problems. Auburn has now got some problems. Their game has been postponed. That is three in the SEC this week. They have a buffer. You have other games like Louisiana Monroe and Arkansas State has been postponed. A couple of others are down. But nevertheless, the weekend, this is where the SEC is really, really feeling the punch of COVID. Now, if you can get these programs back under track, if you can get these programs contained a bit, then you can make these games up on the 12th. That's one of the reasons they built it in to the schedule, was try to get, hey, look, there's the 12th, it's an open date. We've got the SEC championship game on the 19th. That's when we'll be able to play it. You know, the Big Ten doesn't have that buffer, and the Pac-12 doesn't have that buffer, but the other conferences kind of do. But it's a big blow to the SEC. These were big, these are good matchups. I mean, Auburn is ranked. Alabama is obviously number one in the nation. Texas A&M is ranked fifth in the nation. And the three games that are on the schedule are done. There's also danger of a couple of others that are on the board. Sam Pittman at Arkansas has got COVID. So I don't know if Arkansas is going to be down a few players, or some players are in quarantine, and their game against Florida is going to get postponed as well. That would be four of this weekend. So that was kind of the news out of college football yesterday.
So where are all the naysayers saying, shut it all down?
Yeah, where they are, right? Exactly. Just shut it all down.
Well, less SEC games means Spotlight can be on the Big Ten.
That's true.
Maybe even Wisconsin.
Navy has had its second, Navy had its second game postponed. Their game at Memphis has been postponed. That's second in a row for Navy. They're 3-4, so they've had a number of games on their schedule. But
like you said, man, SEC did this right, where they built in a buffer date.
Yeah,
just make sure. It's like, it's probably going to happen. Let's plan around it. Let's plan on it going to happen.
But this is what I want to tell the people who are on the shut it down. Saw this coming, right? I want to tell them, what's your answer to this? Like, what did you want? Just instead of sitting back and criticizing this and speaking from a high horse, a protected area, to just criticize the college football powers that be, what was your solution? No football? None? Right. Like, was your answer no football? Right? Because we saw how the Big Ten got inundated with how much anger the student athletes were telling the conference, hey, enough, we're playing, we got to play, let us play. So if you're standing on the soapbox and screaming to the high heavens that this is a travesty, what was your answer? Because these schools are going through the protocols. These schools are doing the best they can given the environment. My son is at his college. He does not go to class. And guess what? He's probably going to get COVID at some point. I told my wife this yesterday. I said, you know what? He's probably going to get this. It's inevitable, right? If you put 30,000 kids on a campus or whatever the number is, depending on the school size, eventually they're going to mingle eventually. And eventually people are going to catch it. You can isolate the football team, but eventually there's going to be an outbreak. Everybody in college football knew that was going to happen. It was, well, then what happens next? And I think the what happens next has been to postpone games and just see where we're at the end of this thing. And that's what they're doing.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
It's Wake Up Call, Tony D and Ron Culver. Glad you could be with us. All right, let's go out to the Progressive guest line. Progressive making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Derek Fisher, five-time NBA champion, now the current coach of the Los Angeles Sparks in the WNBA, partnering up with USAA. It is Veterans Day, and with USAA is encouraging all Americans to step up, show their support for the nearly 18 million living U.S. military veterans participating in the third annual hashtag Honor Through Action Challenge. And here to talk about that as well as some basketball is Derek Fisher. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Doing well, thankfully, man. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for helping with us out today. A little bit of what's going on with USAA and talk about how you're honoring the military veterans, including your father, John, is a military veteran.
Yes, yes. It's Veterans Day, and you know, every Veterans Day is special, but you know, this one in particular, you know, just really excited to partner with USAA. And like you said, we're encouraging all Americans to step up and show their support for the nearly 18 million living U.S. military veterans and participating in the third annual hashtag Honor Through Action Challenge, which is a real cool and fun way to show your support. So I'm excited, man. I the challenge is fun. It's easy. You draw the letter V for veterans. You draw it on your palm. Well, I used a black Sharpie when I did mine. You put the initials. I put my father's initials are JF. You snap a photo. You share it on social media using that hashtag, Honor Through Action. And it's just a cool way to show your appreciation for veterans on this Veterans Day. So excited to talk to you, man. Excited for this opportunity.
With the Los Angeles Lakers winning the title inside the bubble, and it was a very unique year and obviously tragic at the beginning of the 2020 season with the loss of Kobe Bryant and what the organization had to go through with that. Then a very good season was about to be derailed by COVID. We didn't know if we'd come back. Then there was a bubble. And the Lakers emerged champions when it was all said and done. 2020, looking at what that title, what does it mean for Los Angeles, what it means to you that LeBron and the Lakers are champs of the NBA season?
You know, 2020 has been, you know, really a challenging year in so many ways. And like you said, just starting with the loss of Kobe and Gianna and Peyton Chester and Alyssa Adebeli and other families that were on that helicopter. Like it was not easy to keep going, you know, in a lot of ways. And then, you know, COVID and the NBA suspended and, you know, other sports and, I think the Lakers and, you know, the Dodgers broke through in baseball. You know, it just says a lot, I think, about the courage, the mental toughness, the ability to still stay focused and disciplined, you know, through adversity. This is a special championship year, I think, for the Lakers. And they deserve a lot of credit for what they accomplished.
In a way, do you think winning a title in a bubble situation like that, is it more difficult mentally? Is it easier mentally? Physically, you're doing the same thing, but you're not getting a normal routine. You're broken from that, but also you eliminate the travel. What do you think the bubble meant in terms of preparation and readiness for a team to play basketball?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, on the WNBA side, you know, with the Sparks, you know, we had our challenges. You know, like you said, there are some positives as well. I think it depends on the individual player and coach and what their situation is. You know, I don't think there's any question that your mental health and mental well-being, you know, impacts a lot of what you do, even physically. And so, you know, being in a bubble environment wasn't the greatest thing mentally for a lot of people. But, you know, again, I think that the players and teams and staffs and, you know, all the sports leagues that found a way to try and get through their seasons and keep people healthy and safe as much as possible just deserve a lot of credit. It's unprecedented. So it's hard to compare, I think, to other situations. And you know, hopefully we won't have to be in that situation, you know, again in the future.
Derek Fisher joining us, five-time NBA champion, current coach of the Los Angeles Sparks for USAA. For more on what they're doing to honor military veterans, visit USAA.com/Veterans Day. You won championships with the Lakers. You know what it's like to win with one of the premier teams in sports. LeBron now has a title with the Lakers. Does that matter more? It's one of the more iconic franchises in all of sports.
It's a good question in terms of whether it matters more. You know, I'm not sure if it matters more. I think I do believe that this year in 2020, it will be arguably the most memorable one.
Sure.
Because of what it represents. I don't think it takes away from what he or other players have accomplished in previous years. But the sports teams and athletes and folks that are just finding a way to still excel this year, I think people are just, you know, they're going to remember it for a very, very long time in a different way. And, you know, as you stated, when you accomplish certain things on a bigger stage, more people notice. And when you're wearing the purple and gold, you're on a bigger stage. I think more people are going to notice this championship maybe compared to some other ones. And, the great thing about it is LeBron is going to be wearing the purple and gold again when the season starts. And, you know, I think that's a good thing for Lakers fans.
Derek, I would be remiss not to ask you about your relationship with Kobe and what you miss about him and what he meant to you, because 2020 has been filled with so much news and so much stuff that we'll remember the year by. But Kobe is certainly going to be on top of that list, and it happened early enough in the year that it is going to be part of the way we remember 2020. What do you miss most about Kobe? What do you remember most about playing with him?
What I miss the most is, it's hard to sometimes have conversations with folks that have experienced enough of the same things so that when you're talking about something, you know that they get it too, right? Like, you know that they, you know, if you're a firefighter, if you serve in the military, if you're a police officer, if you're an attorney, like, there's certain things that just they know because they've been in those situations before. So the conversations that you can have with them are different than everybody else. And that's what I miss the most is just being able to, you know, even if he and I hadn't talked for 6 months, like, we could easily pick up the phone or we could see each other at a youth basketball tournament. And there was instant connection, instant recognition of, like, you know, I know you, you know me because of what we've been through together, and nobody else in this whole building understands it but you and I. And that was a cool thing to have. So I'll miss that. And, I think, you know, playing with somebody like Kobe, you have a reminder every day of what's possible when you are fully committed to doing your job at the highest level. It's hard to put into words what that means. Like, you're better because of how great he is. So I was very fortunate to have that example for 13 and a half years in my career. And, I wouldn't be having this conversation with you if it were not for him. Definitely going to miss him forever.
One quick question before you go, and please allow me to do this. My daughter is a young high school basketball player. She loves the WNBA. She was excited that I got to talk to you. She did want me to ask you this one question, if you don't mind. She said, what do you like most about coaching in the WNBA and coaching women's basketball?
Oh, man, I think what I like the most about coaching in the W and coaching women's basketball is that I think the openness and the willingness to learn and to grow and to understand that none of us know everything already, right? And I think that's one of the beautiful things about women's basketball. I've always loved it, always appreciated it, and supported it, is that it's a community. And there's a recognition that we all need each other in order to do well. And that's an enjoyable thing. And so, I think the women's basketball, movement is here to stay. And my hope is that your daughter in high school can continue to see the WNBA as a barometer for where she wants to be and what she wants to become over the next 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years. And we can see her there one day. Because I'm really enjoying it. I think it's a great game, Again, and it's a community unlike any other. Like, if you're in women's basketball, it is for the love, it is for the passion, and that's a good feeling for me to be a part of every day.
Derek, I really appreciate your time. Thank you so very much. I really appreciate it. Thanks.
All right, thank you. Take care.
Derek Fisher, again, USSA, USAA, go to USSA.com/Veterans Day and check out how they're honoring the 18 million living U.S. military veterans participating in their hashtag Honor Through Action Challenge. And Progressive is proud to honor our veterans by donating cars to move their lives forward, especially in times of need. Learn more about their Keys to Progress program and plans for 2020 at KeysToProgress.com. Tony D, Ron Culver, it is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks to Derek Fisher joining us, five-time NBA champion, current head coach of the Los Angeles Sparks. As we continue with Wake Up Call on Veterans Day, again, thank you to everyone who has served this country on Veterans Day, the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month, Armistice Day back in 1918. So next hour, we've got the good, the bad, and the dumb. We've also got Will Gray, golfchannel.com, to talk Masters. That's all coming up at hour number two. This hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need a mortgage that fits your life? Rocket can. You know, one of the things that we've talked about a lot, Ron and I share a lot of our sort of personal experiences growing up in certain markets and growing up with certain broadcasters, right?
Sometimes one person gets made fun of more than the other.
Now, that's true. That's true. But, you know, you grew up listening to Vin Scully,
yes.
You know, great Dick Enberg down in the San Diego area. When I was young, it was Tommy Heinsohn of the Boston Celtics who passed away yesterday. Tommy Heinsohn is... God, I don't know how to put this, but like his whole life has been the Boston Celtics. Like
yeah.
His whole adult life has been the Boston Celtics. He was a rookie of the year for them. He won, I think, 7 or 8 championships during the time when they won everything. He was a coach. He was a broadcaster for over 40 years with the team.
That's impressive.
Like, so imagine you're a 21-year-old kid getting drafted into the NBA. And when you pass away at the age of 86, pretty much your entire adult life has been doing something for that organization that drafted you when you were out of college. Like, it's unfathomable. Like, to just think somebody's been in that line of work in that business forever. And here's the thing about Heinsohn. There's two things about him as a broadcaster. One, he was a homer. There's no question about it. He was a homer. He was a color commentator, so he could play that role a little bit better than a play-by-play guy did. But he never got bored of basketball. Like he's seen it all, but he always acted like he was seeing things for the first time. Like that's an important trait to have. Like it's you can get really bogged down in the monotonous of a long season, a season that doesn't go anywhere, a game that doesn't matter, broadcasting for a team that is nowhere near the playoffs. Maybe a team is rebuilding. And believe me, a lot of the years that he was a broadcaster for the Celtics, exactly what they were, right? They were irrelevant for like 20 years since I think Reggie Lewis passing away to, you know, when they started coming together and going to the playoffs and winning a championship. I mean, there were some lean years, but he always acted as if you were watching it for the first time. He was really excited about this basketball thing, right? He always kept that energy up, even though his whole life had been the sport. And like I said, he had seen everything. When I was younger, part of the appeal of the NBA growing up in the 80s was the rivalries with the Celtics and the Lakers and the Celtics and the Sixers, and later on with the Pistons and, you know, all of the things that we talk about 80s basketball. But when CBS played their theme music for their coverage of like the NBA finals, it was Dick Stockton and Tommy Heinsohn that were on the call for those games. And they were great. Like, they really brought you the energy. I mean, there was nothing like them panning the garden, that old, decrepit building that, you know, had a lot of ghosts in it, and Dick Stockton and Tommy Heinsohn were calling those games. But it's just rare to see somebody who, again, he passed, you know, at 86 years old, so he's lived a very, very full life. But 60 years within the organization, in almost every capacity that you could have, player, rookie of the year, good basketball player, champion, coach, broadcaster, just flowing your way through. So rest in peace, Tommy Heinsohn. That was kind of sad news for a lot. I know a lot of New Englanders like myself who kind of grew up with that. You know, it was just kind of a sad day because, again, he was so important. He was really important to my love of the NBA, to my enthusiasm with the NBA as a kid.
I thought Marcus Smart put it best. He said that he didn't love the Celtics. He lived it.
Yeah, you're right. That's a great point. That's a great point. It really did. I heard somebody say Bob Ryan said nobody bled green more than Tommy Heinsohn. Think about everybody who's bled green. Red Auerbach, right? I mean, nobody bled green like Tom. And he's seen it all. I mean, think about it. He saw it all. He played with Bill Russell. He called games that had Larry, all the Celtics, all the way up. He called them. He'd been there forever, right? And it's just kind of a sad day yesterday for the Boston Celtics. The Boston Celtics, like people talk about Boston being a Red Sox town, and it is, but I remember the 80s, I couldn't find one person growing up that did not love the Celtics. Like as a kid, like girls, boys, it didn't matter. I mean, I didn't meet anybody in my elementary to middle school that was like, I don't care about basketball. Like everybody was into the Celtics. Like their parents were. Like you'd be on the bus, like I'd be on the bus route, and you'd just drive by houses in May and into June, because we ended mid-June. And you would see Celtics flags on porches, and everybody was caught up into it. So, and Tommy Heinsohn was just right there with it all. All right, again, coming up next hour, we'll talk Masters with Will Gray. We'll also have the good, the bad, and the dumb. It is a Wednesday. Thanks for joining us at Sports Map Radio.